Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, this might be our last. It seems like the negotiations for the starting date are kind of tightening up a little bit. So this might be our last show that we record before we know more about when the season might start and when, you know, free agency and all of that might start.
It'd be nice to have some clarity. That's for sure. Hopefully they can come to an agreement by then. Yeah.
Have you picked up on that vibe too? That like, it feels like, you know, if you just kind of follow the cycle of Woj tweets, right? It feels like he's, you know, the so-and-so, the Lakers and the so-and-sos are engaging on trade talks. And then like 15 minutes later, the trade happens, right? It feels kind of like they're engaging in negotiations, but they're just, you know, trying to work out these final details, which, you know, are still very complicated, but it feels to me like there's reason to be optimistic that we'll at least get some clarity on this.
So that reported date of December 22nd, it's November 2nd as we record this, right?
Yeah.
So if it's going to happen on December 22nd, it does have to probably happen soon, right? They got to get training camp, the draft, the free agency, all that knocked out and be ready to go. And what's that, 6 weeks away?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, if they're going to have that earlier start time, get games in by Christmas, it almost has to be that way. So, yeah, I do see it moving in that direction.
Yeah, I there's just so much money. And Adam actually made a really good point when we did Locked On NBA and we talked about it.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Silver. I was like, wow, you got to like that with the commish, huh? Like, yeah. Adam was telling me the other day.
Who do you think I was talking about?
Adam Silver.
No. Well, I mean,
Yeah. Oh, yeah. On the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just talking to him the other day and, you know, I thought he made a pretty good point. but Adam Modest made a good point, on the national show when we were talking about this. And he said, it's not just about the financial potential loss by waiting another month to get going, but also like if you give the NFL an opportunity to take over Christmas, and the NBA potentially loses that day that they have now owned forever, right? If the NFL has an opportunity to take over Christmas and put like some random game there, as you know, they would, if there was no basketball, you know, that, you know, they would make some attempt at it. And I don't think the NBA can afford to lose Christmas. It's such a huge day for them that, you know, the more I think about it, I know it's difficult and I know, there are players whose bodies have gone through a lot over the last year, literal year. But when you talk about health of the league, the more I think about it, I keep coming back to you. I think starting December 22nd or on Christmas just seems to make the most sense.
Yeah. I mean, it's the financial considerations are one of the consideration. I'm not, I don't view them as, I think, primary as other people do. Mm-hmm. But, and I also think that if the financial health of the league is a priority, then a lot of things need to be looked at. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, point taken regarding Christmas Day. It is an important day and all that. I'm just, from a financial standpoint and from a marketing standpoint, I guess I don't look at it from the same perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's complicated. I don't, and you know, you and I think we came down, I think the furthest apart we've ever been on a conversation has been.
Yes. I was just thinking about this. Yeah.
So we're right back to where we started. The conversation has come full circle. What we're going to do, though, this will come up as we find out more about it. And I do have a ton of questions from this weekend's mailbag that we're going to have to get to. So let's answer one of them and then throw it a break, and then we'll pick up and answer the rest of them. The first question here comes from Shuba Modern in San Carlos, I think is the name. So love your podcast and look forward to it, listening to it every night. I first started listening to it after I left rehab a few years ago. It gave me something to look forward to during many difficult nights following my beloved Lakers come back after years in the dumps to win a championship mirrored my own recovery. That's awesome. That's really, really cool.
Good shit, Shuba.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Absolutely. Your narration of the story was also part of my recovery. Thank you. My question is, if LeBron leaves after next year and we still have AD, who do you think would be the best young talent to complement AD in the post-LeBron era? I know you can't get to specific names, but a type of player. Let's talk about a position that you know, would you try to replicate the LeBron AD connection? Is that basically the
path forward big, there? Big creator, right? Like somebody who can be, and those there aren't a lot of those guys, but a guy who can create shots for AD. Not that AD can't create his own, but I think that AD is probably the worst part of his offensive game, because he's actually okay at this, is that ability to create shots for others, right? Mm-hmm. And not so much create them, but correctly identify, this is the open guy to make when this help defender comes over, that means I make this pass. And that's something he can continue to get better at. But I think that if you can complement him with somebody who can get, you know, LeBron led the league in assists this year, 10.2 mm-hmm. per game. And so that kind of guy who can absorb a lot of the ball handling responsibilities while having a real distributing type mentality can capitalize on AD's ability to finish around the rim, and also defensively kind of having two big wings. If you consider AD to be a big wing, as I do increasingly, that's such a formula for success in the NBA that's, and again, we're talking about like two, three guys in the NBA at any given time that fit that description. So good luck.
Yeah, I mean, you look at, so remember for a stretch of like 10 or 15 years, either Shaq or Duncan won a championship. Remember that? And then it was mm-hmm. like Kobe was also in there as well. And I think now it's kind of shifted more to elite wings have done the winning in championships, right? It was either Kevin Durant. The Warriors before then didn't really have an elite wing. But Draymond kind of defends like AD, and then you and I have talked a lot about like maybe we should think of AD as like a super big wing. Mm-hmm. And obviously LeBron has been in that mix. Kawhi Leonard was in that mix. So like even if the Lakers didn't have Anthony Davis, I would be looking at it the same way. Like I would start my team with an elite wing and then build out from there, you know, they're so valuable in every way that the game is played now.
And it's so cool that we've got two of them again, if you're classifying AD, is that they're very different types. Like LeBron is a different type of player than AD, but they're both big wings, right? Mm-hmm. Except one's this amazing creator who can also get you 35, 40. And then AD's got that triple threat ability. It's just the way the skills of this team stack on top of each other. I get excited thinking about this year, about what could be in the future. Yeah, we're in a good place.
And here you are wanting an extra month off. Let's take a quick second here. And when we come back, I actually kind of want to pick up on some of that. Obviously, Pete can't get into specific players, but he can kind of nod along or pretend he doesn't hear me when I bring up some guys, because the question asked for some guys. So I'll bring up a couple guys here and why they would make some sense and kind of go from there. Today's show is brought to you in part by Built Bar. Head on over to builtbar.com, use promo code LOCKEDON, and save $10 off your first order, your second order, your third order, and however many orders you or your friends that you tell about this great product get to benefit from. They have great flavors, everything from caramel brownie. My personal favorite name is Cherry Barcia. The cookies and cream one is fantastic. And then they have the regular, you know, salted caramel is my original favorite flavor. And it's great no matter what you might be looking for. Are you looking to supplement a meal while you're trying to cut weight? Are you looking to have a little bit of extra protein to add to a meal if you're trying to gain weight? Are you trying to maintain weight by, you know, just having a nice healthy snack? It's going to be great for you. It's going to have you covered. So head on over again to builtbar.com, use promo code LOCKEDON, and save $10 off your next order. Again, promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off at builtbar.com.
So
So obviously he is nowhere near as good as LeBron is defensively. But when you're talking about like young guys who would fit with AD, Luka is so like such a tantalizing idea. It's his ability to create and shoot, which would spread the floor for AD in ways that, you know, even LeBron didn't really offensively. He doesn't really, you don't think of LeBron as a floor spacer. AD would have to make up more for his defense, though, in ways that he didn't necessarily have to with LeBron. So it would be kind of a different mix. But that pairing would just be so damn fun on offense. The best, you know, probably the best young facilitator in the NBA with the best finisher, one of the best finishers in the pick and roll that we've ever seen. That seemed to work to this point pretty well. Obviously, people are going to say Giannis. Giannis is a little more complicated because he isn't the passer that LeBron is. Obviously, is not at all a floor spacer. So you'd have to really focus on shooting with those guys. But like if you were to ask me, hey, find me two guys in that, like, you know, 25-ish age range or younger who you would prefer to have with AD, and that's where I would start with those guys. Those guys are going to be running the league here fairly soon. Well, that is if LeBron isn't freaking immortal, which we have no proof to the contrary.
We cannot count on that.
I'm interested, though. This is something that I've asked myself a ton over the course of this, you know, offseason since last season ended. And, you know, the bubble was such an outlier. The circumstances where not just the bubble where chemistry was heightened in terms of its importance, but also like the way that KCP was able to shoot. I'm not sure if that's really replicable. The way that AD was able to shoot because of the sight lines that all of the players really kind of talked about meant something. And I'm kind of wondering if the way that the season went was an outlier that we can't necessarily count on in the same way. Have you thought about that at all, or are you just pretty much just enjoying it?
With his jumper specifically?
Well, like just like the circumstances, you know, were the circumstances so out of the ordinary that the Lakers' success in those circumstances felt like a potential outlier?
I think that the bubble, the Lakers were more prepared for the bubble than other teams were. We talked about this as we went into the bubble, and I think it bore out that idea that the Lakers' chemistry would really help them persevere. We saw a couple of other teams kind of fall apart. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. We were talking about three teams being the creme de la creme of the NBA for most of the year prior to the bubble. And only one of them even got to the conference finals. So is it possible that another one of the most talented teams in the NBA in a different setting makes it there and the Lakers have a tougher challenge? I think that's totally possible. And as we've said, we've got Steph coming back. We've got KD coming back. Like it's going to be fun. It's going to be a shootout for the 2021 NBA title. Mm-hmm. But in terms of the basketball components of it, I mean, look at what AD's done historically in the playoffs. He got beat by all-time great Golden State Warriors teams, and they upset a Damian Lillard-led Blazers team mm-hmm. handily, right? They swept them, right?
Yeah.
And so AD's been that dude in the playoffs before. It's just he didn't have a LeBron James next to him or this type of defense. So that's when you get knocked out in the first round, in the second round. That's historically true, even for great players.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not that I think it's an outlier. I keep going back and forth on the concept of it being a potential outlier.
So what's different about it? Like, what would be an outlier about it is that there are factors there that are, and obviously there are some, but which ones would impact?
Well, so the shooting specifically was something that I've thought a lot about. And so basically, we're in kind of this era of specialization for role players, right? The guys are expected to be spectacular at one thing. And if you get somebody who's really, really good at multiple things, well, that is no longer really a role player. Or you're talking about like the second or third best, or you know, third or fourth best player on your team.
Right.
And I think in the bubble where guys were able to shoot in the same gym for how long were they there for? 3 months. Mm-hmm. And being able to shoot in that same gym and all of their games were basically the same. That consistency made it so that guys who were not necessarily as good of shooters as those specialists that we talked about, so KCP comes to mind, where he is pretty good at a couple things. You know, he's pretty good as a defender. He's pretty good as a shooter. And then in the bubble, he became really good as a shooter, and his defense still remained the same, right? So he now becomes one of those really special role players. And unless that's the player that we think he is from here on out, then that's fantastic. I just don't know if I would necessarily believe in that. And you can kind of apply that to all of the guys on the Lakers, where like AD shot better in the playoffs and in the bubble than he has typically, or he definitely did during the regular season, right? And he's obviously spectacular on defense. And if he now also becomes a really good shooter, that's when you're talking about one of these all-time playoff runs. I could maybe see replicating that a little bit because of how talented he is. But you know, those teams that rely heavily on the specialization of role players, those guys, you know, not being as good at these other things. And if your shooting is not that much better than guys who are better at multiple things, then you become less valuable, or your team becomes basically worse by comparison because they have these better, you know, the other team, the Lakers here, has better overall talent that is now capable of doing some of the things those specialized players are potentially able to do.
I don't know to what degree the numbers bear out the idea that the Lakers like kind of overshot their talent in this. Mm-hmm. Like KCP shot 38.5% from three in the regular season. And in the playoffs, he was at 37.8%. So he's actually lower. Now, some of those regular season games were seeding games, but that's pretty much, he shot the same thing. Like, Lord knows Danny Green wasn't as good in the bubble. And AD had been shooting 40%+ since January 1st. Mm-hmm. So his jumper, and he's got a nice jumper. Like, he's a very skilled dude. And I think, you know, you point out a lot about his stance and his feet. And I think that can be inconsistent, but when he locks in, it's a lot more consistent, and he's able to hit shots off of a 1-2 step, off of a jump stop. So there isn't anything from like a skill perspective where I'm like, there's no reason he can't do it. Maybe it's the sight lines, as you said, but I mean, like I said, he'd been shooting 40%+ from January 1st. So it, like, if you look at it splitting the regular season in the bubble, I can see that, but he was trending up all along, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Really quickly, next question here before we throw to another break. Never Worry 24 writes, "Hey Anthony and or Pete, do you guys think LeBron and Davis will switch jerseys still after the Davis trade? LeBron wanted Davis to wear number 23, but that was apparently Nike didn't give them the go ahead on that. So do you guys think that could still happen? And would you like it to happen? Love the show. Thanks for everything that happened." All right. So the second question is really interesting. I don't have any insight into this whatsoever. I don't know if you do, whether or not
I actually care about this, and I never care about stuff like this.
This is weird, right?
I would love for them to switch their numbers. Huh. I would love for there to be certain jerseys of LeBron and AD that are just frozen in time in 2020. Like, mm-hmm. when you see a number 3 Anthony Davis jersey, you're like, that's not just an AD Lakers jersey. That's an AD Lakers jersey in that great 2020 year. I don't know. Right. I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah. I come down basically on the same side of that one, where it would be nice if from here on out, we can just identify that jersey or that combination with those two guys as the championship run. But even with that said, I would prefer them to win another championship. and we can just say like,
oh, you got superstitions?
Huh? I'm a little superstitious about this. I don't mess with the basketball gods on this one. You won your championship with it. Keep those jerseys, run it back next year, and we can say how those are the jerseys that, and if they lose, then go ahead and change it. Then it didn't, you know, it didn't, the voodoo didn't work.
I'm not as stitious as you are.
what's the line from The Office? I'm not superstitious. I'm a little stitious. All right, let's take a quick second here. And when we come back, we have, wow, we have quite a few questions to get to. So we're going to try to get through as many of those as we can. All right, so the next question here, great name here, Albie420 comes from... huge fan of the show. Question, if the NBA and NBPA do agree to begin the season in December, which I honestly doubt, you were talking about this a second ago, and we're recording this on November 2nd. We would be less than a month away from guys reporting to camp.
Mm-hmm. People, and we haven't had the draft or free agency.
It's insane. Is it crazy to think roster sizes can be potentially expanded for a portion of the season? Oh, that's a good idea.
That's a great idea.
And maybe the trade deadline can also be the roster cut down deadline. This can help teams like the Lakers and Heat, whose players will need additional rest throughout the season. Thanks for Anthony. That's a great idea. The roster expansion thing. What I would maybe do is just say, you know, those two-way players, those guys are just on rosters. Those guys are, and their number doesn't affect the cap, because two-way guys don't really affect the cap.
Yeah, we don't know what's happening with the G League season either. So there's a whole like group of guys,
a giant pool,
good basketball players that are in kind of this limbo. So I love this idea. If he got this during a 420 moment, it was contributed a little to this show. So thank you for that.
Yeah, I like the idea of it. Cutting it down, like, this was something that I actually enjoy with baseball, is when the season gets cut down, you know, it's like really almost that time. It's, you know, it's the stretch where either teams are fighting to get into the postseason, or you're trying to, you know, optimize everything to get ready for the best postseason run you can have. So it'd be kind of fun. This is something that honestly that the NBA should do consistently. Like, why not? It gives you more opportunities for, you know, guys to make it into the league. G League stories just tend to be really good stories too, right? Where Alex Caruso was a draft nobody basically, and it was now a top five most important player on a championship team. Like, that's insane. Those are really cool stories. So if you expand the rosters out, not just this year, but in any given year, you might give some more opportunities there for some guys, and also keep everybody, you know, more fresh for whenever the postseason happens. Like, I think one reason the basketball was as good and fun as it was in the bubble was I think most of those guys were more fresh than they typically are in most postseasons. And if,
oh, no doubt.
And if you have guys who are more fresh and they can really go at each other, that the basketball itself was absolutely phenomenal in the bubble, and anything you can do to replicate that is I'm 100% on board with.
No, I love this 40 man roster type idea, like there is in baseball. They brought 17 to the bubble, and so if you wanted to make that permanent, I don't think that there's too much. Like, the one thing I was like, oh, there's, you know what, 60 more guys, and money's already going to be down for the players, so that impacts everybody financially. There's more, the same pie to split amongst more people. But I think that's one of the, that's not for me to decide how important that is, right? But I think that's one of the places where that can be an issue. But overall, I really, really like that idea.
Awesome. Yeah. It's the guys that you would be adding probably wouldn't be getting that much bigger a piece of the pie, right? You're talking about like minimum type players. So I don't think the money would be that impacted by it, but
sure. But you're adding 60 guys.
Yeah. Right?
So even at the minimum, that's an over 10% of the league is, like 15% increase in roster size.
Yep. All right. Let's go another question here. Kodama 78 writes, question for Anthony and Pete. How likely do we see the Nets implode like we saw the Clippers do this past playoffs? There seems to be some striking similarities to me. Important two stars that have never had, that have their own agendas. Team that had a strong previous identity that was successful. Stars getting preferential treatment that chafes their teammates. Kyrie calling himself and Durant a coach, for example. Just seemed like an interesting and hopefully entertaining comparison. Would love to hear your guys' thoughts on it. What do you think, Pete?
So I too have thought all of those things. The one very big issue I have with that is it's predicated on certain assumptions about them as people that I've come to realize the closer I've gotten to the team is some narratives about guys are just not like terribly accurate, or it's like some aspect of them that has been kind of taken in a certain direction. And so I don't know KD, I don't know Kyrie. And so much of that argument is based on they're not going to be able to get along and figure it out on a personal level, that like from a basketball standpoint, like some two-man ball screens between Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant at the end of a close game sound pretty damn good to me if you want to score. I have questions about their defense. I don't think that they have a stretch five on the roster. Perhaps Durant steps into that, but how many minutes is he going to want to do that? That might just be a playoff thing, because I don't think either Jared Allen or DeAndre Jordan can defend the perimeter particularly well the way you need to in the playoffs. So, but again, they're going to be able to score in big time situations. Two of the best, even playoff level shot makers. The Nets are going to be a tough out, even though I see everything that you're saying there too.
So they're a team that I'm looking at as potential, you know, giant gap in between their ceiling and floor. It actually kind of reminds me of the 2012 Lakers, the Dwight Moore year, to a certain extent. The other thing to keep in mind here is Steve Nash is a first time head coach in the shortest offseason in NBA history. So there isn't going to be very much time for them to get acclimated to each other. And if they start slow, you know, the memes are going to be flying about this team because of the stuff you're talking about, because Kyrie and KD tend to rub people the wrong way on the internet, because there's definitely some smoke regarding how they are as his teammates. How big the fire is in relation to that smoke, I have no idea.
There's one other element that kind of plays to that listener's point in that neither Kyrie nor Durant, as amazing as they are particularly notable as passers. And that's something where if they were to do like what LeBron did with the early camp, the players camp, and the more familiarity they get early on, yeah, there's going to be that learning. That's a great point about Nash, is just that there's a huge learning curve, a lot to learn and bring together in a short period of time. And maybe they start off slow as a result of that. It might not be the worst thing for them to build slow and build strong and be, you know, 30 and 20 after 50 games. But then by playoff time, they've built something that's a little more solid than they'll be able to have at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, it also makes me nervous. Like, they really pushed hard for, I guess part of the reason why Kenny Atkinson was let go was because he wanted to play Jared Allen, who is a better, it's Jared Allen, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it sounded like Jared Allen, the old lineman for the Vikings. Yeah, it's
with two T's.
But Jared Allen is a better player than DeAndre Jordan. And Kyrie and KD really want Jordan to get the majority of those minutes, which, you know, is another dynamic that Steve Nash is going to have to juggle here. So, you know, and it's not like we've ever heard of playoff DeAndre Jordan the way that we've heard of playoff Rondo, you know. So there's a lot going on. There's a ton of balls up in the air with when it comes to this team. And usually you would want a nice long offseason to be able to hash some of that stuff out. And they aren't even going to have preseason games, right? So it's going to be a lot. They're going to have to hit the ground running, and I'm not really sure they have the talent to potentially be able to. But it's also talent that, like, Kyrie Irving hasn't played a full season in a little while. Kevin Durant is coming off of that Achilles tear, so you get there's just a whole bunch of stuff they have to get right, and some of the stuff they have to get right is kind of sort of beyond their control.
So much of basketball is cooperative and being able to work together, particularly on the defensive end. They're going to be fine on offense because they've got guys that can do that individually. Having two of them that are scorers like that, that's going to be a handful to deal with. But on defense, they've got a lot of ground to cover before the playoffs start, right? And they've got a lot of work to do in a relatively short period of time.
Yeah, it's a fascinating one. It'd be a fun team to cover, to be honest. It'd be a really interesting. Another thing that helps them, like is in their favor, you know, if we're making the comparison to the Clippers, I think Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving are a lot closer in terms of their friendship than Kawhi Leonard and Paul George are. I would be shocked if Kawhi Leonard and Paul George have ever had a conversation before this last season. You know, they don't seem like a pairing that would go out and hang out too much before they were co-workers. But KD and Kyrie seem to really get along, and they seem to have a lot in common there. And that, you know, when you're trying to do all of the things that they're going to have to do before the season, you look for any foundation, and friendship is a pretty good foundation to build on.
Yep, of course.
International Laker fan, we'll go last question here because Avery is screaming at me. Hey, Anthony and Pete, first off, what's up, champs? Did you do that? For your first video, did you go, what's up, Laker champs? Or did you just go Laker fans?
Yeah, just Laker fans. Yeah.
Laker fans, championship fans.
I actually haven't done one with a voiceover yet. Those are coming. I'm working on some things with, yeah.
Okay.
Can't say too much about it, but yeah, I haven't done a voiceover yet, but now I'll just say, what's up, Laker fans?
Hmm.
And this is part of what we do, baby. We're going to have our eyes on the next one soon. So
fans of championships.
However, mm-hmm. Some inside Lakers gossip.
Ooh.
The internal emails of like how everyone in like the group emails addresses each other. There's a lot of like, good morning, champions. And then the body of the email, right? Like everyone around the office is like, what's up, champ? How you doing, champ? Like, a lot of that.
Jeannie's like sign off, you know, her signature at the end of every email is like Jeannie Buss, owner of the Los Angeles Lakers, champions of the 2019-2020 season.
We're all very much virtually high-fiving each other. That's part of the sad thing is like we didn't really get to celebrate together and like, we did it, you know, like so there's a lot of virtual high-fiving going on over the last month or so.
Did you get a bottle of Jeannie's tequila to celebrate? I know you enjoy tequila just as much as I do.
I do, but I did not.
Maybe not as much.
I've tried it though. It's very good.
I don't think anybody enjoys tequila as much as I do, but you're up there. You're
No, there are others. Tequila, there's a whole, you know, there are tequila bars and mezcal and all that. Like, if you put tequila in front of me, I will drink it, but I'm not like, there are people that are all about that.
Mezcal margaritas are fantastic. Those are good. Mm-hmm. All right. So yeah, got sidetracked. this has been an amazing year and I'm still riding the championship high. I just spent the day rewatching some season dunk highlights from the season. So I was wondering if you both had any favorite memorable moments from the season. My favorite has to be the LeBron reverse windmill that Andrew Bernstein so perfectly captured against the Rockets. AD and AC had some great ones too. Another favorite of mine was Danny Green putback dunk that no one saw coming. He eventually got drug tested for that. Keep up the great work, both of you, and I look forward to reading, listening, and watching all of your content. P.S. Built Bar has been an awesome sponsor. The bars are awesome, peanut butter all the way, and I've got Built Go on the way. Thank you very much. They are both very good products. So do you have, like, you've been able to just go through all of the, you're
well, not all of it.
This is probably fresher than mine.
Scratched the surface, but yeah, like, remember that dunk where AC had a breakaway and both LeBron and Dwight jumped behind him and everyone was like, "Wee!" right? Like, it was like, they made a great defensive play. LeBron hitting the step back. He had just hit it was like his fifth three of the fourth quarter to turn like a 6-point game against San Antonio into like a 25-point game. Oof. Went on this crazy run.
Yeah.
He gets knocked down. The whole team runs over to pick him up. And the huge run we went on against Chicago earlier in the year in the fourth quarter, that was super fun. The game at Denver right before the All-Star break was one of my favorite games of the year at Miami in the regular season. That's one of the fun things about going back through the tape is like, oh, I forgot about that play or I forgot about this game. And I wish there was a way to bottle it up. And I'm going to try and make as many videos as I can just to commemorate those.
Yeah, you mentioned the one where Caruso dunked it, right? And Howard and Dwight were both up in the air with him. But there was also a layup that Caruso had that LeBron like jokingly tried to block.
Oh, uh-huh.
Remember that one? That was phenomenal. Just basically like all of the Alex Caruso had a phenomenal season. Maybe he'll be the next season review guy that we do. But I mentioned this a couple of times on the show, but the way that people react to Alex Caruso is just amazing. So early on in the year, there was some blogger who was pissed at how often Bleacher Report was tweeting about Alex Caruso compared to, you know, other better players, I guess. And that brought some joy into my life, just thinking that somebody is so salty that they're literally counting the number of tweets about Alex Caruso. that was pretty incredible. And then, you know, in that Rocket series, the one that went kind of viral, where the Rockets
blockers, Alex Caruso, 60 points.
That was just so, so basically, I, you know, you guys have been listening to the show now for about 3 years or however long we've been doing the show. Generally speaking, if there's a moment that like either pissed people off or brought them pain that made, you know, brought happiness to the Lakers, those were my favorite moments.
The bringing others, our enemies, pain, laughing at the Clippers with you and Harrison. Yeah. Didn't happen on the court, but that was an all timer right there.
The birth of Petty Pete, like that was so fun. Oh, oh man, actually, you know what? Maybe that'll be another show topic. We'll just do like our top 10. Like I'll actually sit down and think about the Lakers season and find the 10 best moments here and try to find audio and stuff that we can actually put together a decently produced show. That'd be a good one. That's going to do it though for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. We still have a couple questions, so maybe we'll come back to that well on tomorrow's show, as well as, you know, maybe reviewing Alex Caruso's season. If there is still time, you know, tomorrow's the biggest day in you know, our country's recent history. So please get out there and make your voice heard. You know, you guys know how I tend to sit on the politics and stuff. No matter how you vote, just make your voice heard. That's all I'm saying. Just get out there and participate in part of what makes America as great as it is. That'll do it though for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. I'll talk to you tomorrow.